ॐ नमो भागवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भागवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भागवते वासुदेवाय in every town and village.
It's volume 4.
Yeah, I think it's volume 4. Please. So, Om Jnana Timirandasya Salakaya Chakshu Vigitam Tasmai Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Skaputam Dina Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kada Mahiyam Dilati Savedantikam Mukam Karo Dila Chalam Mamrum Rangare Tegarim Yatripa Tamaham Pandi Sri Guru Dina Tarinam. So, I'm just thinking this morning, singing the Gurvashtakam prayers. Samsara Dava Nala Vida Loka. We're living in the fire of material existence, both metaphorically and literally. A big challenge for the country, actually, but also something that we meditate on every day, how much people are suffering. Sometimes they're more acutely aware of it than others, but the reality is that material existence is pretty much a blazing fire, and everybody's being consumed by that fire. In the form of the time factor, so everybody ultimately becomes fuel for the fire of material existence. So, the spiritual master is the through whom Krishna extinguishes this fire of material existence. And Srila Prabhupada is our exemplar in this effort to help relieve the conditioned souls, the living entities caught up in the fire of material existence by his instructions. He's distributing Krishna's mercy by giving Krishna's instructions. And the instructions by which we can get relief from the blazing fire of material existence. And by following the order of the spiritual master, one's able to get out of of material existence. And Srila Prabhupada put a great amount of effort into distributing his instructions far and wide. And Srila Prabhupada would wake up very early every morning, wherever he was, and he put time into an effort into translating the Vedic literature into volumes and volumes of books that effectively extinguish the fire of material existence. The instructions in the Bhagavad Gita, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, are all meant for relieving the conditioned souls of their conditioning, of their material conception of life, and designed to help us rise above the material and come to the platform of spiritual. That's what it means to follow the order of the spiritual masters, to engage in activities that remove the burden of material existence and elevate us to the platform of pure spiritual consciousness, even whilst living, apparently, in the material world, even while being part of the material world. At the same time, the devotees that are sincerely and effectively following the order of the spiritual master, their consciousness is elevated above the material realm. So even though the devotees live in the material world, they're not of the material world. So Srila Prabhupada was given the order by his spiritual master to preach in the Western world and in English. Right? In English. Ramaru Mataji last night mentioned a story which I thought was inspirational for me, at least considering the topic that I wanted to talk about. Srila Prabhupada wrote the Back to Godhead magazine established the Back to Godhead magazine in which year? Which year did Srila Prabhupada establish the Back to Godhead magazine? Anybody got any ideas?
44.
Right. Where was Srila Prabhupada in 1944?
India.
Yes. What language did he write Back to Godhead magazine in?
English.
What language were the people that he was distributing the Back to Godhead magazine, what languages were they speaking?
Bengali.
Huh? Bengali. Yeah, Bengali or Hindi. That is far out, isn't it? In fact, you know, in the narrative that we heard last night, there were devotees who were selling the Back to Godhead magazine who couldn't even speak English themselves. Yet, as was pointed out, Srila Prabhupada had great faith, obviously, in the order of his spiritual master and in the potency of the Mahamantra. Mahamantra can transcend any language barrier. Because it's not the material world, it's from the spiritual world. Yet, see how much faith Srila Prabhupada had in the order of his guru. Well, in the order of his guru, that such that he was writing the Bhagavad Gita in English in a country or in a situation where most of the people that he was distributing the magazine to couldn't read it. Why? Why did he do that?
Order of the spiritual master.
Yeah, it was the order of his guru. And as his, we have another volume of the Lilamrita called the first volume. What's the first volume called?
Lifetime
in Preparation. Srila Prabhupada was preparing himself preparing for his future mission. You know, it's fairly clear that Srila Prabhupada knew what he was doing. If you look at, you know, even he said when he was in New York, what was it, talking to the train conductor? Was it Mr. Rubens? Was that his name? And Prabhupada was telling him, there are temples, there are communities of devotees, there are farms. Prabhupada was explaining to him what would happen. It was interesting that the devotees in 26 Second Avenue wanted to keep Srila Prabhupada in New York. And when Srila Prabhupada went to San Francisco, there was a little disease, I guess, or a little apprehension, that Srila Prabhupada would leave the fledgling community in New York and go to San Francisco. The devotees of New York couldn't, and many of the devotees certainly, Srila Prabhupada's vision was expansive and broad and encompassed the vision of the previous acharyas, the vision of Lord Chaitanya. You know, some of Srila Prabhupada's activities were not appreciated at the time by the devotees who were his associates. Right? They couldn't appreciate his vision. And so there was a little concern. Why is Prabhupada going? Well, he wasn't Prabhupada then. Why is Swamiji going to San Francisco? Right? We'll lose our little New York scene. We'll be disturbed. Right? So Prabhupada's vision was very, very broad. And it's interesting that he was... my phone's off, please. I better turn mine off too, by the way. It's embarrassing. I think I turned it off last night. I did. Not back on again. So, off. You hear that? Somebody's ringing up someone. Okay, so Srila Prabhupada had a vision that wasn't always appreciated or understood, but it's worth us meditating on. And you know, we've just had a very successful Christmas marathon for which we've gathered this morning to celebrate. Is that right? Yeah. Ginger Rupa's busy cooking in the kitchen. She's been busy in the kitchen for the last 3 days. Actually, I think for the last 3 or 4 lifetimes. So, we're in persecuting, or not persecuting, prosecuting, or Following Srila Prabhupada's orders, especially with the book distribution and the book distribution marathon over the Christmas period, we're trying to please our spiritual master. And to that extent, the devotees worked very hard. It's a big sacrifice, and we want to appreciate those efforts. And we want to also increase on those efforts moving forward. I think we're going to look at the figures in a minute, but I think we increased our book distribution by 80,000 dollars worth of books last year, and I think this year we did about 120,000, very roughly. So that's a 50% increase, right? Which is probably the biggest increase that we've had for a long time. I wanted us to meditate on what Srila Prabhupada's purpose is. You know, why did he translate the Bhagavad-gita? Why did he write in English? Why did Srila Prabhupada write in English? So, I'm going to read a little bit from the Lilamrita in every town and village. This is in Nairobi. In 1971, Prabhupada, this is from page 259, Prabhupada wasn't satisfied preaching only to the Indians. This is ironic because you're all Indians, most of you. And what have I spent my life doing? I was just thinking about it last night. You know, a lot of my time preaching has been cultivating the Indian community. So who am I to say? Who am I to say? But anyway, let's continue, shall we? He wanted to preach to the Africans. Indians and Africans were completely segregated. But since a Krishna conscious person does not make distinctions based on the body, Prabhupada said the Indians had a duty to share their spiritual culture with the Africans. Right? So you can remove Africans and put here Australians. Okay? Now the only reason why I mention this is because I know some of the devotees spent time only distributing to Indians. And in one sense there's nothing wrong with that. Who are our best customers? Huh? Indians. Yes, and as you know, because some of you are, or many of you are, my best friends, most of them are Indians. Huh? But we've got to keep in mind that Prabhupada wanted us to preach to the Australians. Huh? This is a sneaky trick. But interesting, Srila Prabhupada came to the West to preach to the indigenous population. Right? And then Srila Prabhupada went back to India with his dancing white elephants. Right? But then Srila Prabhupada established ISKCON in India, and very powerful, very strong. The Indian ISKCON in India is bigger and more influential and has many more resources than we'll find in the West, so-called West. India is very powerful preaching, big temples, large communities of devotees. But then also, in that same mood, Krishna's amazement, Krishna is sending large populations of Indian communities all around the world. Now, those devotees don't realize what they're doing, but they're just continuing the cycle that was started by Srila Prabhupada. They've come to the West ostensibly for what?
Money.
Huh? Money. Right, yeah, money. Basically, that's right. Money. But that's not the real reason why they've come. The real reason why they've come is to distribute Krishna consciousness to the local people. That's what Srila Prabhupada did, and that's what Prabhupada says here, is the duty of the Indians to give their spiritual culture to others. Isn't it? Right? So this is why this book distribution is so important. You know, we're not necessarily going to convert people by just preaching to them. Right? But at the same time, we shouldn't think, oh, we're just, you know, like the devotees in New York got comfortable with their thing. Oh, this is who we are. Right? This is who we are. We just, but our community is meant to be bigger than what it is now. That in and of itself will be a challenge. But we need to think beyond our current situation and see with the vision that Srila Prabhupada had. Prabhupada impressed on Brahmananda Swami that his first duty in Africa was to give Krishna consciousness to the Africans. Right? Otherwise, why did Srila Prabhupada write books in English? If he wanted to preach to the Indians, he would have just written books in Bengali or in Hindi. Right? But he wrote it in English. In London, Prabhupada also had similar discussions with the devotees in England. Now, there's nothing wrong, and we should cultivate the Indian community. Obviously, that's obvious. That goes without saying. But the bigger challenge, is to cross over. And of course, we're doing that. I'm not suggesting that we're not doing it, but we shouldn't lose sight of that fact. But this is what Srila Prabhupada wanted us to do. And of course, what that will do is shift us out of our comfort zone radically. Right? Just like, for me, it was very difficult having to deal with the Indian community. I would talk to somebody and I would say, "And where are you from?" And they would tell me, you know, Bangalore. Or whatever it was, and then I would think, where the hell is that? I didn't know. When I first started, you know, making friends with devotees like Vijay Gopikesh and Kurunidhi Krishna and Srivas Nimai and so many. But actually, the first Indian families that I dealt with were the Pamamals. Does anybody know the Pamamals? They came to Australia, their family, their grandfather came to Australia in the early 1900s. Right? Practically the only Indian family in Melbourne. The Pamamals. They established Opal Jewelry. All of the boys are retired now, and some of them are deceased. And I noticed that Pratap, who's been a long-time supporter of the temple, Pratap, his shops are all up for lease now. So that means he's retired. So most of the Pamamal boys, and he's my age. Right? Now he's retired. So, you know, these were the first, and I was scared. Not scared, but I was really uncomfortable because I was trying to make friends with people who I knew very little of. I didn't know very much of the culture. I didn't know anything about the languages. I didn't know anything about the regional flavours of India. Right? And, you know, I now know that if somebody has come from Mumbai, that means they could be Bengali, they could be South Indian, they could be North Indian, and they probably speak four or five languages. Right? Like the Katars are Marawadis. Well, what's a Marawadi? And they lived in Calcutta. But actually the family's originally from Rajasthan. Right? And they have a strong connection with the family has been supporting temples in Vrindavan for, you know, they're a Vaishya community, I guess you could say, who have been, had a connection with the temples in Vrindavan for generations, and supporting Panki Bihari Ji. So, you know, now I have an understanding of all of this culture, and that took years to absorb and assimilate and understand. Such that now, a lady rang up yesterday at the temple, and I could tell, I hadn't seen her, I didn't know her, but I could tell by her accent that she was a Bengali. I could tell by her accent that she was a Bengali. But we need to become so familiar with the culture that we're preaching to that we can tell, "G'day mate, how's it going?" And you won't know where he's from. Because, you know, sometimes I go for a walk down the beach, and the Muslim community, and this is a big challenge for the Hindus, right? There's a lot of Muslims in Australia now. They tend to congregate down Sandridge, the beach down at near Webb Point. Do you know what I mean? Right? Down the end of the beach to the northwest. Right? And I used to go to Chutney Japa a lot. If you walk from here to Webb Point, that's 8 rounds. Right? And then, or at least for me it is, and then when you walk back, that's another 8 rounds, and so you can chant 16 rounds in a long walk down to, so it's a 2-hour walk, right, down to Webb Point. And at that beach, very often I come across the Muslim people that would be there. And I remember seeing a group of young men, and I thought, and you know, actually they don't look very much, they look similar to Indians, right? People from Iran and Iraq and whatever. And so I was, you know, I like to greet people. So I was thinking, oh, here's some interesting Middle Eastern gentlemen. Right? When I went to high school, we had a different name for them, but I can't mention that, so I'm politically correct. So I thought, I'll say, "G'day. Hello. G'day." And have a guess what they said? I was thinking they were going to speak back to me in a, you know, in a Middle Eastern accent. So "G'day." And I said, "G'day, mate. How's it going?" So, you know, Australian culture is a very, it levels everybody down to the LCD. You know what the LCD is? The lowest common denominator. Right? So that's "G'day, mate. How's it going?" Who won the footy? Or who won the cricket? So we need to get to know. It's not that difficult, but we need to get to know, because this is the, this ultimately, when we've got all of the Indian community on side, what are we going to do next? And that's why the book distribution is so important, why the Harinam is so important, why book prachar distribution is so important. Because these things gradually dissolve these misconceptions of bodily identity. You know, it's a mistake to measure the effectiveness of the Hare Krishna movement by the ethnicity of the people who are at the Aarti. Just like if you went in 1966 to the Lower East Side and looked at all of the people in the room, you think, it's just a bunch of hippies. Right? Just a bunch of hippies. And if you look in the temple room in 2020 at the Saturday night Gaura Aarti, you think, it's just a bunch of Indians. But that's wrong. That's completely wrong. That's not what it's going to be. Srila Prabhupada's vision is much, much broader, and we should embrace that. It's going to push us out of our comfort zone, just as even preaching to our own ethnicity is challenging. That's not easy. It's not easy. But then stretching beyond that, out of our comfort zone, we could be made very uncomfortable. But that's the vision. I mentioned in the class the other day, we need to avoid the mood of what I call then shortcut-itis. Right? You know, like you get tonsillitis, appendicitis, right? So we need to avoid shortcut-itis, which means we try to make everything easy for ourselves. But you can be guaranteed that if you are now a member of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, there is no such thing as easy. Huh? No such thing as it. Lord Brahma says, by the fire of ordeal, one becomes purified. One makes advancement. Right? What is it? Theistic conduct. There are a number of principles there, but Lord Brahma mentions. One is purified by the fire of ordeal. What's our ordeal, if you like? What's our tapasya? What's our austerity? Our austerity is not, you know, fasting or going without sleep, although we do tend to do that, or you know, in the hot weather sitting out in the sun, or in the cold weather sitting in the cold. This is not the austerities of the bhaktas or the austerities of bhakti. The austerity of for us is to preach. That's our austerity. Or getting up early in the morning, maybe that's one of the major austerities. But you know, we don't have to do fasting or, you know, physical austerities. Although, mind you, preaching is physical. How many hours a day book distribution were you doing?
Depends on the group. I was probably doing 7 hours.
Yeah, 7.
I think Rikesh Prabhu and Vijay Prabhu, they were doing about 10 hours.
Yeah. And Meenakshi, how many hours were you doing? Is Meenakshi here? How many hours?
On weekends and
Easter's
off, I have about 10 hours. But probably
when
he's working, then
it was
like 5 or 6 hours.
Yeah, pretty effective. Mahalakshmi, where's Mahalakshmi? How many hours were you doing a day?
Like 3, 4, sometimes 7.
Wow. Just imagine if these girls were out doing 8 hours. I guess, you know, you can work smarter, not harder. But generally speaking, you know, it's okay if you're around a temple. It's easy. Easy pickings. Right? Easy pickings. But when we're out, it's hard work. So anyway, Yeah, Prabhupada wanted us. I don't know if anybody's read anymore. You get the point. Get the point?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and it's probably, you know, this is a theme. Some of you have heard this theme before. But I thought we should meditate on it. Srila Prabhupada spent many, many years meditating on his mission. And we should also, following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas, or following in the footsteps of Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada is our guru. And we know that if we're to please Krishna, then the method, the methodology of pleasing Krishna is please the spiritual master. You know, everybody wants a super guru, right? There's this notion that in the Judaic Christian paradigm, it's the Messiah, the person who's going to come and save everybody, huh? This concept of the Superman, the superhuman, who's of the world but not of the world, or in the world but not of the world, right? Everybody wants that person. Well, have a guess what? We've got him. And there he is. He's there. Actually, you know, I'll tell you a story. It's always good to have a Sankirtan story, isn't it? We were doing Sankirtan, at least what we called Sankirtan. We were selling paintings in Hobart, of all places. And I was having an extremely tough time because I was with somebody who I didn't really know and didn't have a friendship with. We'd been away from the Melbourne temple for 4 weeks, which felt like 40 million years to me because I was only a devotee. I'd been initiated maybe 6 months. And they've been a devotee living in the temple for 10 months, right? And we'd gone down to Tassie, so no Radha Balamba, no Gaudiya Thai, no devotees, just me and this particular devotee who, you know, I wasn't particularly friendly with. And then he was the senior devotee, I was a junior devotee, so he used to give the Bhagavatam class in the morning, and I just used to fall asleep. And of course, what was the most serious thing that I was missing? Prasadam. No prasadam. And you know, I couldn't cook, he couldn't cook. And I was feeling miserable. And you know, my wig was badly out of shape. I needed a new wig, so I was very self-conscious. In those days, we used to wear wigs. Which, you know, anyway, we'd shave our heads and then put a wig on. What did we think we were doing? What did we think we were up to? And you know, people would. Once I went and was selling candles in Dandenong and went into one workshop, you know, in one factory, and I said, yeah, anybody interested in candles? And they said, yeah, mate. We got somebody, so they sent out one of the guys in the factory who wore a wig. They sent him out to see me. Anyway, this is Australian humour, a bit of sarcasm. Yeah, mate, here's your man. So out comes the guy with the wig on. So anyway, I was feeling deeply the separation of the devotees. And I was just waiting for Balaram to ring us up and say, you can come home now. But that never happened. Actually, I was ringing the temple to get our marching orders. So anyway, We would rise at 3 o'clock in the morning, every morning, and have a shower. And in those days, this was in June in Hobart, right? So what's the weather like in Hobart in June, Prabhu?
Pretty cold.
Yeah.
And even though we're staying in a caravan park, even though we could put 10 cents in the shower to get hot water, we were staunch brahmacharis. So we were having cold showers. And I was feeling such separation from his devotees. And at least I was sleeping on the floor of the caravan because I wasn't going to sleep in any of the beds that the dirty caravan meeting demons had set. To keep myself pure. But at the same time, inside I was crumbling. Crying pretty much because it was so austere. Then one night, Srila Prabhupada came to me in a dream, and then he just sat in front of me and he put his feet on my head and just rubbed his feet on my head. And I woke up and I said, "He's here." It was such a vivid dream, and I was so shaken by it, I woke up and said, "He's here." And then I realized it was just a dream. But then that day, all of my anxiety was gone. And then Balaram rang up and he said, "Okay, time to come home." So, we want a super guru. Everybody wants a super guru, a messiah. We've got him. We've got Srila Prabhupada. Of course, we have Prabhupada's representatives also. But everybody within ISKCON is subservient to Srila Prabhupada. He's the source, he's the foundation. Everything, ultimately, everything that we do has come from, well, everything that we do should come from Srila Prabhupada. We also have to be careful of bringing in other influences. But we should know that in order to be successful in our spiritual lives, and this is why, you know, along with everything else that we've been doing, it's a credit to Gopa Vrindesh Prabhu and Param Brahma and Dwija and Rikeshwari and Meenakshi and Matsya and Mahalakshmi, and we've got a long list of names here that we'll read out, have put so much effort into the marathon. There's so many other things that are going on around in the ISKCON Melbourne yatra. There's so many activities going on. It'd be easy to be discouraged. Oh, you know, nobody's into book distribution. You know, it's too hard. But we're very fortunate to have, well, we get inspiration from Vijay Prabhu every year. He comes and revs everybody up. But we also have the devotees themselves who have stuck at the book distribution and have built it up. And of course we want to do more. That's what Srila Prabhupada wanted. Prabhupada wanted the devotees to double it. But we halved it. We added on half. Doubling it, very hard to do. Not impossible, but because, you know, Prabhupada said impossible is a word in a fool's dictionary. But we've increased. So it's a great credit to the devotees who sacrificed so much in the month of December to please Srila Prabhupada. And of course, we know that Srila Prabhupada is very pleased by these results, and we should rededicate. Already the devotees are planning next year's marathon, at least subtly, starting to meditate on it. Is that right? Yeah, why not? And the book distribution that we can be doing throughout the year. But that will mean, you know, just like on Gita Jayanti, everybody had the great idea to go to the Shiva Vishnu temple. And it was a very good idea. Just, we should have got permission first from our best friends, you know, our supporters. And, you know, 10 devotees all at once, 9 devotees all at once. You know, we're the Hare Krishnas, we're famous for blowing out a good spot. Yeah. So we need to be organized. And this is a great, this is a big challenge. Majjhima Bhakta means a preacher. And it means they have to work together cooperatively. And it means, you know, you can't always just do what I want to do. We have to think about others. And we have to work cooperatively with others, you know, in order to have a world-class organization, which is what Srila Prabhupada wanted. World-class, well-organized, well-coordinated. That means sometimes, no, not sometimes, all of the time, you practically speaking have to put aside your own, what you want to do or what I want to do, and have to consider somebody else. Can you believe that? You know, I was the firstborn in my family. My parents kept on telling me that I had to share. Huh? And I hated that. Hey, come on, what's this sharing business all about? Brothers are for domination, for subordination, right? Selfishness. You know, my parents used to tell me, you're selfish. My wife still telling me I'm selfish. So it's a sacrifice. Working with others, working cooperatively. But you know, it's a hallmark of this community that generally speaking, the devotees put aside their personal considerations and they sacrifice for others. And that's what Srila Prabhupada wanted. And that's what preaching means. And that's what effective book distribution will mean. You know, working together and broadening our horizons, broadening our vision so that it's as big as Srila Prabhupada's. And sometimes on occasion when Prabhupada said, preaching even on other planets. Huh? Well, that's pretty far out. We've got Melbourne and Victoria. We've got a fair bit to cover. So let's sort that out first. But it will require sacrifice and you know, embracing Prabhupada's vision and accepting the austerity. You know, we come to spiritual life thinking, oh, now I'm going to be a peaceful yogi. That's what I thought. I'll learn meditation and I'll go and live on a farm and life will be happy. We live happily ever after. Huh? Well, I never made it to the farm. In fact, the devotee sent me out on book distribution. And the first thing that I was selling was daisies and flowers. That was the first thing I learned. So we were, you know, my idea of living in a transcendental farming community where everybody was happy and we work together. I ended up out on the street selling candles and paintings and became a manager, administrator. So my notion of peaceful life was blown apart very quickly. But of course, by the same token, the satisfaction and the happiness and the pleasure that's derived from engaging in those sacrifices and ultimately serving the devotees and serving Srila Prabhupada is worth every ounce of effort, because it's a, you know, in the Christian, in the Bible, or certainly in the Christian liturgy that I was exposed to, there's a statement that, what is it? The peace of God that passes all understanding, right? And we feel that as devotees. When we engage in devotional service, the satisfaction and the happiness and the pleasure that's derived from rendering service, no matter how much austerity is performed, is deeply, deeply fulfilling and satisfying. So even though there's austerity in serving the spiritual master, we hanker and crave for that opportunity to serve, even if it's difficult. In fact, if it's not difficult, then we wonder, oh, is this bona fide? Huh? I don't know if you've had that feeling. I'm enjoying my service. Oh, is that okay? But sometimes the satisfaction and the pleasure that we can get from our service, even if it's difficult, is more satisfying than any of the sense gratification that might be on offer in the material world. That's the power of bhakti. The power of bhakti is such that even if it's an austerity, it is still so attractive and satisfying that we don't want anything else. Huh? I mean, get that especially from the austerities that are performed from preaching, especially book distribution. On behalf of the community, I guess it's my honour and duty to thank all the devotees who went out in the marathon, distributed so many books, added an extra $40,000 to the economy of the Hare Krishna movement in Melbourne, and that's welcome. Keep in mind, we lost the catering at Falls, right? Because of bushfire panic, right? And so how much is that? There's $30,000 we lost.
Minimum 20.
So, you know, you win some, you lose some. That's the nature of existence, you may have noticed. But it was a commendable effort. We really like to thank the devotees. And so let's have a look at the scores. Let's move on. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaura Bhaktavrinda Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada's transcendental book distribution. Ki Jai.